Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Cigar Chat, brought to you live on CigarFederation.com, broadcast around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Very proud to have our show broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. Wherever you are out there in the world today, Robbie Raz from Cigar Federation, cleaning up my desk with ashes everywhere, here with you as always. And Logan is on assignment at an undisclosed location, so our good friend, the conscious Canadian, hard-working Canadian, John, cigar surgeon, is sitting in as co-host today. John, thank you for taking the time. And you're also on location.
I am. I'm in the bustling metropolis of Taber, Alberta, which, I don't know, it's like 7,000 people here or something, but it's a great location to open up a cigar shop, so we are.
So when you say open up a cigar shop, what is your role with all that?
So essentially my role is everything cigar related and operational stuff. So I come in, I help them get set up for cigar product. I help educate them on, you know, what is a cigar product, how to merchandise it, how to make it look good, how to label it, all that stuff. You know, the thing that everyone says is be careful what you wish for because you just might get it. And I always wish to be in the cigar industry. And now I am, and now I don't sleep, and now I'm on the road, and so now I have a whole huge new appreciation for all of the people out there that, you know, are out on the, like Jason, who are out on the road all the time. It's a tough gig, man. It is exhausting.
And you're teaching people what a cigar product is.
Yeah,
that was my favorite part of that little sequence there.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of people out there that think a cigar product is like, you know, the little Primos or whatever flavored cigars, and that's their idea of what a cigar is, and so you bring in, you know, premium cigars from Nicaragua or Honduras or whatever, and they've never seen this stuff before in their life. They're excited to try it because there's a good market for it, but, you know, these people are like, oh, boy, that's a lot more expensive than $6 a cigar. Of course, talking Canadian prices, but, you know, it's equivalent of like $1.10 cigar in the States, so it's an uphill battle at times.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us and fly co-pilot for me today. Be the goose to my maverick, if you will.
I got you.
Yeah. Hopefully you make it through the whole show, because Goose didn't make it all the way through.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, double, just pull both handles down. Yeah. And
watch the eject. Watch the canopy there. Shouldn't, it's, that's like, God, that's 30 years ago. Wow, okay, anyway, we'll move forward. Jason Holly is our guest tonight. Jason's Viva Republica. Sorry, I screwed that up already. Jason, thanks for joining the show, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, glad to be on.
And where are you located today? Because you're all over the place.
I know. I'm doing this actually from the front part of my retail store in Plains, Pennsylvania, which is on the cusp of the Pocono Mountains.
Cool. And I know you've got some ruffians in the crowd, and we'll hopefully they won't say any words we're not allowed to say on the Armed Forces Radio Network. But if they do, John, we'll just bleep them out, and it'll be fine.
I think we're good.
That always makes for a fun show, and you just never know when people are going to chime in. So it's been a while. I think it's been over a year since we've had you on the show. It was before IPCPR last year, I think. It might have even been before that. So we haven't talked in a while. I'm actually smoking the Propaganda, which was your 2014 release?
Correct.
And that was in my top 10 from that year. I didn't do a top 10 last year, but this was like my number four or five or six cigar of the year. This is a fantastic cigar. I've never smoked it in this particular vitola. This was a kind of a short fatty here. This is like a 54, maybe 56.
Yeah, we call it a bunch of different names for that. You know, the Sumo Robusto or Short Robusto, but it's decently format-wise, it's going to be something smaller, you know, the typical width of a cigar Robusto format.
Yeah, and this is a nice smoke. And I'm actually, John and I usually do our pairing show, and I'm pairing it with a pale ale that I actually brewed myself, and it's actually pairing really, really well with the pale ale. I've got a chocolate stout here that I also brewed myself that I have very low expectations for, so we'll see how that goes. But
that might work out really well, just because, you know, I mean, if you're smoking on that, you know, frequently, you had it rated pretty high there, the chocolate notes that come from that are pretty much on the, you know, on the forefront in terms of the flavor profile. Chocolate, coffee, a little bit of cinnamon. Yeah. Kind of like Mayan chocolate kind of thing. And that's you know, coffee, it's a great pairing, anything in that realm.
Now, you're talking about a real chocolate stout that was brewed correctly. This is one that I made, so who knows what's going to happen. If not, I've got one back in the fridge, and we'll work it out. But So tell us, how's everything been going? You've got a lot of new stuff coming up. I know we've got the Ivy and the Cloak and Dagger series that we wanted to talk about, some things like that. Just kind of let us know how everything's been going over the last year or so.
Sure. I mean, I think everything was on track, and trajectory-wise, everything was kind of smooth sailing up until Cinco de Mayo when we got the news from our friends in Washington. Yeah. And in terms of strategical aspect, what it's going to do is going to cause some things to come out a little earlier than they probably should have, you know, some thoughts that aren't fully developed yet to make its way into a product format, because we're going to try and make sure that we have, you know, at least as many different offerings as we can on the market by August 8th of this year. So it's, in some ways, it's kind of forced our hand, so to speak, in that, you know, I had a timeline of 10 years worth of product planned out that we've been, you know, we're only in year three of. So that next 7 years worth of product is going to materialize in the next, you know, 60 days. So it's going to be a busy summer, and, you know, just happens to coincide with the annual trade show. So, and I, you know, I think it will be something, an endeavor that will certainly challenge a lot of manufacturers to really come out with, you know, the best ideas that they have, and, you know, fully, you know, develop as best they can, especially because of the way the FDA considers products, and, you know, packaging is key to the product. You know, it's not the blend, and that kind of makes you wonder if the health aspect is really a valid concern when they're really looking at the packaging and not the blend.
Yeah, I have a feeling, like you were saying, and John, I don't know if you want to chime in on this or not, that it's going to be a really, really, really busy IPCPR show this year. It's, and it's, in a way, it's fun. I'm looking at this. I'm trying to find the silver lining here. It's fun in the sense for us, because there's going to be so much to talk about. There's going to be so much to cover, and for the average cigar smoker, the next few years, I guess, are going to be ripe with product. It's going to, there's going to be a lot of, there's going to be a lot to choose from. And that could be in a stark contrast to 3 years from now, or whatever the I don't know. We've talked about it, and I get so confused over what timing is and everything, but it's just kind of strange that we're going to be bombarded with product. And I mean, it's like you were saying, it's forcing your hand, and they're forcing everybody's hand. I was kind of hoping that we wouldn't talk too much about the FDA. Such a downer.
I think it's a necessary evil, though, right now. I think, yeah. I'll be honest with you, I kind of like talking about it right now with people, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions that are out there. There's a lot of people that really don't understand, you know, what this, you know, the deeming regulations, what it actually entails. There's a lot of, you know, misconceptions that you can't eat customers of cigar, I mean, employees of cigar stores can't sample product any longer when they're working, which is, you know, it's obviously not going to be something that would be an issue. It's just, the FDA sees that as giving a free sample as a gateway to creating a new smoker. So as, if you're adding on product, like they said yesterday in the webinar they did, you can still do 2-in-1s, 3-in-1s, 4-in-1s. It's not going to really change the marketing dynamic, so to speak, I don't think. But it's going to change, you know, I think the way that maybe some manufacturers approach free product. Yeah. They might, and that's something I think was necessary anyway in the industry. And I think a lot of the things that the FDA regulations are going to do is they're going to just move up what was naturally going to be, you know, some natural selection that was going to happen in the industry, just because the show is getting to the point where every year it's a rat race to see who has the newest product, the slickest packaging, and that's just not a sustainable business model for brick and mortar retailers, where, you know, most stores, you know, maybe 25-35 of their SKUs do 60% of their, you know, their business, and when you keep on adding that new product mix in there, it starts taking away from their, from the thing that they really build their business on, and they're taking a lot of risk on product that may or may not sell. And I know it's tough to, I mean, I'm talking as a boutique manufacturer, and I'm admitting that that's a problem in the industry, but I think what it requires manufacturers to do is to keep retailers', you know, interests in mind. You know, not just product for the sake of product, not, you know, designing things that are, you know, necessarily overtly gimmicky and just taking up shelf space, because this is a time where there's going to be a purge within the industry, and it's going to happen based on what companies either have, you know, the financial abilities or the strategical abilities to survive the waters that the FDA has just created into, you know, absolute. And it's a tumultuous situation. I don't know that there's any script for it. So it's going to be the companies that are able to really put that together for themselves that are going to survive.
Yeah, it's just, it's so tough to, my brain wasn't built to read legal documents. And maybe, and there's some people who are, and God bless them. Mine was not. So when I read through some of this stuff, and we had a show last week, and it was just Logan and I, and we try to do that every, like, once a month, and just kind of, we'll BS about this, that, and the other. And Logan went on and on and on. because Logan's looking at it from the standpoint as, I mean, he runs our online store, so it has a huge impact on him. It has a huge impact on all of us, but he was talking about things in ways that I hadn't necessarily thought of. You're in a unique position where you're looking at it as a shop owner, right, and a boutique cigar manufacturer, so you're kind of getting hit double on this one.
Well, actually, when I thought about this earlier today, because of some things, I kind of have to see this through a variety of different lenses, because, you know, as part of the Miami Cigar family, it's not just Viva Republica. You know, I'm involved with some of the other things that go on with the other brands that are part of the portfolio. So we have, you know, 113-year-old manufacturer in La Aurora as part of our portfolio with, you know, a slew of pre-market, you know, predicate product that's going to be able to be exempted. You have the Nestor Miranda lines that have existed, you know, for 18 years. You have the Don Lino, all that different stuff that's come out from that. And then Tatiana, which is, you know, the bulk of that came on the market. So, I mean, we have a lot of, in the family, there's a ton of product that I think we're going to be able to get through the, you know, the exemption process, which at least from a fiscal aspect, you know, maintains some solvency for, you know, the company to be able to go forward. So that's a good thing to be in. And I think, you know, partnering with La Aurora from the start, going back and you know, in retrospect, it was a fantastic, you know, idea, because it's a factory that already deals with the FDA because they manufacture products for Altria. They, you know, they're not, there's no such thing as a, you know, FDA approved and inspected factory, but they're already, you know, in line with all the protocols of best manufacturing procedures that you need to do in quality control to prevent any kind of contaminants from getting into the work environment. So we have a leg up on that respect, and then we have an owner of the factory who's, you know, extremely forward-looking in terms of the business world, you know, really sees it beyond what most people in the cigar industry do. And that's why he's been preparing for this for a long time now, DMIs. And there's, you know, he's got plenty of product, plenty of tobacco inventory, and the capital to be able to, you know, survive any challenge that government can really develop.
Yeah, it seems like when I hear you say that, there are some companies who are prepared for this and can weather that storm. I mean, you think of the Fuentes and the Padrones, and I think when you mentioned earlier, you're talking about, 20% of your SKUs or 60% of your sales. I don't remember the exact numbers that you use, but those are the companies that you're talking about, I assume.
Sure.
The Fuentes.
Yes,
and the
I call them staple brands.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And those staple guys, they're going to be, for lack of a better term, they're going to be fine. And it's the companies that have, you know, been introduced over the last few years who are making great cigars, yourself, you know, you think of companies like Crowned Heads and Warped and cigars that we love and we love to talk about, are on the verge of extinction, really, which is kind of scary. But so just one thing, because I feel like you've got a pretty good grasp on this, for the average cigar smoker who's watching this show and, you know, is active online or whatever, and or maybe just happens to listen to this podcast and enjoys a cigar, what's the most important thing that they need to know, and what's the best way that they can, you know, get involved?
You know, that's a good question. I think the important thing right now is to understand that by no means is the door shut on this issue. There's still a potential avenue of two different things that are pending in Congress. One would be changing the predicate date from that, you know, seemingly arbitrary February 15, 2007 date when Congress authorized the FDA to, you know, the Tobacco Control Act. The issue with that is it opens the gate for a predicate product for vapor. And that's contrary to what the tobacco wants. Big tobacco wants to make sure that people stay on cigarettes, stay on inhaled, combusted product as opposed to, you know, either vapored product or a cigar, which isn't intended to be inhaled. And that's exactly the agenda of the big tobacco companies. They want, you know, they're seeing some decimation of their share in terms of it because of the vapor side. So that was the issue. Why we're in this, you know, in this battle to begin with is part and parcel largely because of that issue. But the second thing is there is a language that was put in on the appropriations bill that would basically tell the FDA they can't use any funds to regulate cigars. Those two things are still pending. Those won't be voted on until the appropriations bill gets a full floor vote, which is either going to happen June or after the election, because there's a recess for the, you know, the election year, and we're going to have an entirely you know, different set of agendas come November, depending on the outcome of the presidential election. I think the country's going to take one of very two polar opposite turns in terms of regulation and free market, and I think that, you know, some of the direction of the FDA will hinge on that. Glenn Liu pointed that out the other day in an online chat. We were talking, and he mentioned that you know, the president's going to come in, the new president, either it's Hillary, Trump, or someone else, we don't know yet. But they're going to come in and point their own FDA chief, and they're going to have their own agenda. And, you know, perhaps they'll want to take a step back and look at the issue and really understand the nuances of the premium cigar industry that make us very different than cigarettes. I was in a conversation earlier today with a retailer from Texas, and we were talking about how the FDA just has this misconception that cigars are just like cigarettes, that it's all very sterile and commodified and big tobacco, and we're just not that. And when they find out how many little off-the-shelf brands that exist, you know, throughout this country, whether it's in Ybor City, Cayo Ocho in Miami, in the Bronx in New York, where there's a bunch of different handmade cigar rollers still operating and making cigars, all these tourist destination areas, Key West, they're going to find out, they're going to get inundated with applications for exemptions from these people, and they're going to have to process it, and that's going to be an issue that they're going to have to be prepared to face. And I think they may have underestimated the amount by simply, you know, using Perlman's guide as to what was on the market back in 2007, which, you know, wasn't comprehensive and was basically catered to only the massive companies in there. And there wasn't much of a boutique movement going on there that you saw that came out, you know, after that, but you have all these house brands that are technically going to be eligible for exemptions. And now, you know, stores that have their own, anyone that relabels. So it doesn't have to be Viva Republica or, you know, any other brand, Crown Heads, that uses someone else's factory. This is going to affect every retailer who has their own house brand. You know, that they're now a manufacturer. If you're deemed a relabeler, essentially. So there's a lot of different hoops that people are going to have to jump through here. Compliance is, I think, going to end up costing a lot more time than money, per se. But I do know time is money in terms of labor costs. But I think a lot of people are going crazy about what the costs could be for substantial equivalency, same characteristics application, which most people are going to be putting in for. I don't think it's going to be a high-cost scenario, but I do think it's going to be something that's going to be a lot of tedium, a lot of research, and countless hours on the phone with an attorney to review your documents and make sure you comport with the regulations that exist now, and then also the guidelines that the FDA will be putting out in the next couple months.
Yeah, there's just so much out there, and thank you for breaking that down, because you took a lot of information and you made it pretty consumable. I mean, at least for me, and I would hope that it's consumable for the rest of our audience. We've got a bunch of audience questions here, so I think we're gonna skirt away from the FDA for a little bit. I'm sure it'll come back up, but I do want to get into some of these questions. Just a reminder to our audience, you're listening to Cigar Chat, brought to you live on CigarFederation.com, broadcast around the world in the Armed Forces Radio Network. We're here with Jason Hawley of Viva Republica Cigars, talking about FDA, and we're going to get into some more cigar-specific questions here. John, we're nominated for a podcast award, man, and we need to tell people about that. So I'm going to throw you under the bus and make you tell everybody about it.
It's pretty exciting, actually. We were nominated in the Games and Hobbies category, and initially we just thought that nomination was just really one or two people nominating us, but it turns out that was a competition of nomination of podcasts in that area. And not only did you have to be nominated, but you had to sort of pass a certain level of stringency for quality and number of episodes, and we made it. So very exciting. There's going to be voting coming on Sunday, otherwise known as Game of Thrones Nights. So before you go and watch Game of Thrones, very important that you vote for our podcast. It's going to be daily voting. The votes get reset at midnight. We'll be sending more information out about that coming up this week, and of course we'll have it on our website. So because I know everyone out there is very happy with the one-click solution. We're going to have one-click solution on the website, so we'll get you taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. It is pretty exciting, man. There's 10 podcasts per category that receive nominations, and of games and hobbies, and that's like video games and all that stuff. It's the fact that we got nominated, I think, is like you were actually saying this before, John. You're saying, like, I'm actually truly happy just to be nominated, and I'm kind of stunned that we're nominated. I thought the same as John did, that it was, you know, we get one nomination and we're in, and that's not the case. And somehow we passed all the quality control questions. I don't know how we did that.
We put a lot of work into this.
No, well, yeah, but maybe they don't. They must not listen to the shows that Logan's on. Maybe that's it. I'm just kidding. And the podcast award, and we'll get off of this in a second, but it encompasses all of our shows. So Cigar Chat, Sharing Our Pairings. What Embargo, Pipe Dummies, yeah, and so forth. So anything that's broadcast on the Cigar Federation Network falls under that umbrella. So as John said, there will be more information on cigarfederation.com to come. Voting starts Sunday. of a 3-day weekend for some reason.
Great timing.
Yeah, thanks.
Beautiful timing.
Yeah, so hopefully, but that's the key. We get people to vote on Sunday and Monday, and we should be good. But I have no idea how long voting is open for. We're trying to find that out. But there'll be more information. There'll be a big banner and everything on the front page, so you guys can cast your votes.
So reeling it back in.
Yeah.
Talking to Jason, talking about Viva Republica. Jason, we have a really good question, which is kind of poignant because Rob is focused on propaganda, and it's from Jason Myers. He wants to know, can you tell us a little bit more about the Brazilian wrapper that's used for that? He couldn't find much information about it. And he wants to know, is there any relationship between that wrapper and the Arapiraca?
No, I mean, it is a Brazilian wrapper. It's technically a varietal that, depending on where the actual seed was from and where it was grown, has been called something like a cubra, just indicating like a portmanteau of Cuban Brazil, so a Cuban seed planted in Brazil. It's a cubra varietal, but it's an actual seed that came from the PDR region of Cuba, and it was something that Guillermo had grown through the cooperative growers that we have. We have cooperative growers in Ecuador, Brazil, Cameroon, and through the Mirafell family. Variety of different groups that we you know, some of our seed varietals are taken and actually planted and grown by them and then sent back to us for processing. So it was a particularly hardy wrapper. It was not as thick as broadleaf. It had some of the characteristics of Connecticut broadleaf or Pennsylvania broadleaf. It was, you know, resilient and hardy, but the leaf structure on it was really, really dense. And I don't know if that had something to do with creating some of the characteristics that the leaf had, but I know it was able to be fermented significantly more than any other Brazilian wrapper factors ever fermented, which is why it's got that really dark tone to it. It was just able to take the temperature extremes more because of that hardiness, which is the reason that broadleaf also, you know, can be fermented to some great extent in terms of temperature range because of just how much, you know, harder the leaf is. But smoking a pure grade of that particular wrapper is what led me to use it. I had a pure grade roll in really small of a format, like maybe a 30x4, and just a quick roll one, and I just like the amazing amount of, it just tastes like chocolate. It was such a chocolatey kind of flavor to the wrapper, that then the filler composition was all about trying to add a little bit of complexity without, you know, overdoing it. So it was the different, you know, when I put different countries in a blend, it's not there as a marketing thing, so you could say, oh, there's 5 countries or 6. It's not like, and believe me, wine companies aren't trying to say that their grapes are from 6 or 7 different countries. They like to be in you know, one specific terroir. But in this case, the different country complements really allow you to balance things out that you just don't find in the microclimates in the Sabão region in the Dominican Republic. So you go to these other countries to find things that are just native to their region or grow better in their region, and they complement each other just in the way, you know, anything else does when you're putting together a blend. But, that wrapper is probably my second favorite wrapper that I've ever used, with the Ecuadorian Sumatra being my absolute favorite. Which is why guerrilla warfare, advanced warfare.
So, I mean, obviously everyone's got a different blending strategy, but obviously for that cigar, it sounds like you started wrapper and migrated the blend from that perspective. Is that normal for you? Like, is that normally how you would approach a blend strategy?
There's no rhyme or reason to, like, my blend strategy. It can start with, it could be smoking something that Guillermo's working on and saying, wow, I really like this characteristic, and then finding out what caused that, you know. Was it the binder? Was it a filler component? Was it the wrapper? Isolating that one particular flavor and then going and finding the accompaniment that goes with that. And it's, you know, it's, again, I'm not trying to create cigars. I try and do it the right way, which is create a cigar and then create a brand around it.
Right.
Not create a brand and try and make a cigar that fits that image. It would be, you know, the Guerrilla Warfare, the name just fit perfectly because of what it was. I mean, it was small. It was unorganized, the company at the time, and it was a little cigar, you know, a little 4x41, but if you weren't careful, it'll knock you right on your ass, and that's what it was meant to do. And that's the tribute, you know, to the guerrilla warfare aspect. So, you know, the names, all the different names, they kind of play into different things, and Cloak and Dagger was definitely something that I knew with the FDA regs coming out. I wanted to get a little sketchier with my blends and not necessarily get into, you know, elaborating all the different things that go into it to, you know, further complicate what we're already going to be going through regulation-wise. And I think it's a fun way. You know, some other companies have done it. Viaje with the Mystery, and not really releasing the blend info. And it allows me to get products done a lot quicker without. And I want people to focus on what's in it. You shouldn't care what's in the cigar. As long as it's, you know, legit tobacco, you should really just enjoy the cigar for what it is and not necessarily get you know, caught up in what, you know, this is, you know, Pelo de Oro, and it's the romance of the industry is great, but when you're a cigar smoker, you know, the proof is in the product. And I think just, you know, it's the same thing with anything else. You know, we get a little caught up in scores and labels and things like that. I think in the end, they're all just cigars.
And they say you can't smoke the packaging.
Exactly. Perfect.
Back to you, Rob.
Although there's a meme going around or a photo going around, and it's of, I believe it's a hip hop artist, and he's smoking a cigar, and it's got the cedar sleeve on there, and he's smoking through the cedar sleeve. So you can actually smoke the packaging if you want.
I've seen bands smoke before.
Yeah, I've seen that too. And, you know, some guys will post the picture of, like, it seems like it's always, like, a Drew Estate Liga Privada that the band is getting smoked on for some reason. Every time I see one, it's always one of those cigars. But this guy had the full-on cedar sleeve, and I'm guessing he just didn't know any better.
I bet it had some cedar notes.
Yeah.
Probably some overtones of cedar.
Yeah, some charred wood notes in there as well.
Crazy.
So one thing I will say about this propaganda, because I love this cigar, and I haven't smoked it in a while. I think you actually gave me this cigar that I'm smoking now at IPCPR last year when we did a little interview. And I think it's part of that interview made it into our B-roll outtakes, John, I think.
It sure did. And we're going to have, you know, bring it back to the IPCPR because we're excited to go back to Vegas. I think everyone's excited to go back to Vegas, but we're going to have a huge crew. Spoilers, we'll talk more about that in June, but we're going to have a huge crew down there. So obviously part of that is we're going to get some real quality B-roll. So look for that for sure.
Longer videos of us screwing up.
Which we don't really have to try at. Honestly, we just show up and open our mouths.
That's the beauty of it. So let's see. I'm going to go through some more of these questions here. A bunch from Jason Myers. I'm going to skip through Jason's because we always ask all his questions. Let's see. Okay, so Bob Dog is curious. He's curious about the Ivy, and let's talk about that because that's – well, we're going to find out here right now. He says he's wondering how the Ivy is doing and what is the release status. Has it become a regular offering yet? What's from Bob?
All right. The journey of Ivy is a long one, full of, you know, size. It's been a complex process of pulling off what I wanted to do because there's a lot of different moving parts that go into it. Knowing that everything was going on with regulations and all the different stuff that was happening, I started about a year and a half ago. All the new blends that I've been working on are all based on existing predicated blends that come out of the factory with various ratios. So basically that when it comes time for me to have to go through SE, I can really demonstrate that there's not much of a difference between this and that, and this was before this, so that should be good. And it's just to jump through the dog and pony show that the FDA has so eloquently decided we need to do. But what that has caused me to do, in a good sense, is now I am integrating my tobacco usage with the mothership, being La Aurora. And, you know, many people may not know this, but La Aurora is absolutely, you know, explosive in Europe. I mean, in terms of their sales, they've been massive growth in Spain and Southern Europe, new inroads in the Scandinavian markets, and we have a great team over at the factory. Gustavo Velayos and Guillermo have been working on really dominating the European market. So we have a ton of production of cigars that go for there in the U.S. and all the other, I think La Aurora is in something like 67 countries distributed. So using the tobacco that they use, as opposed to some of the different things that I used in the previous blends, Guerrilla Warfare is a really old blend, so it has, you know, a bunch of different stuff that they don't use a lot of, and that's what, you know, kind of chokes up my production at times, because when I order, you know, 2,000 boxes of Guerrilla Warfare, 50 count is 100,000 sticks, we process and we produce that, and then we have to go back to the mulling process again for the next batch, so it's not a continuous flow of production. Even though we're shipping those in quantities about 100,000 at a time, it's a big volume, but again, it's not to the level of the 9 or 10 million cigars La Aurora makes for special certain projects. So what I've been doing with Ivy is I used a lot of the tobaccos that are used in the Preferido and Puro Vintage lines. So there's some similarity. The blends are absolutely not the same. There's just a starting point, and then there's some little mixes and massages done here and there. But I wanted to go for a cigar that would stand the test of time, that it wasn't a fad cigar. you know, this is the year of Nicaraguan Habano, which it is. I get that. But it is using, you know, a wrapper that's, it's you know, it's Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, which is, you know, Ecuador, I think, for the last 3 or 4 years, some of the wrapper that's been coming out of there has just been out of this world. Mm-hmm. It's the characteristic of the cigar was something that you would not get tired of smoking. So it had to be, you know, in the terms of body, it had to be right in that medium-ish world. And in terms of complexity and flavor, it had to be just high off the charts. So what happened is it created that blend. We had enough cigars to do a launch at Casa de Monte Cristo that we did back in April, the end of April. They got the first, I think, 400 boxes that went there. And then we have a lot of other packaged product ready to leave the factory and come over. But it's not a wide release product. It's like a pilot kind of thing. It's a different retailer manufacturer partnership model than it's been used before. So what I'm doing is carefully, you know, bringing it out into places that, you know, what you want to see a new cigar do is succeed. So everywhere that it's going to be going, it's properly rolled out, marketed, introduced to the consumer, so that there's really not any potential for failure, so to speak. You know, we did the event at Casa. We sold 190 boxes in the first hour and a half. And it was because at Casa, they've been explaining to their customers what it is, and they understand that there's, I mean, this is a cigar that's going to be defended to the end of time in terms of not allowing it to get out into mass market or into, you know, being sold below the listed price. It's really something that I plan on staking a lot of integrity and time into building, because it's a brand that fits another side of my personality. I think the Viva side is the very casual, you know, the political theme stuff, and Ivy is a little bit more of the, you know, the polished side that I think at times I can exude or fake, and allows me to, you know, to do that side of who I am. So, you know, I can't be all, you know, it's two different vehicles. They're two separate brands. They're owned by the same company and made at the same factory, the same everything else, you know, sold by the same distributor. But they're just two, they're meant to be two different experiences for the, you know, the consumer and for the retailer.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, the Ivy is not a Viva Republica release. It is it's its own entity.
If you look at the bottom of the box, it'll say, you know, made exclusively for Ivy Cigar Company, and then underneath it, Viva Republica. So, you know, Ivy Cigar Company is the best way to explain it is Acid and Liga Privada.
Okay.
They're both Drew Estate cigars, but they're just two very different brands, and they appeal to very different consumers, different price points, everything else. So I think brand segmentation is something it's really important to, you know, to do as we're moving forward, especially as it's going to get a little more confusing, I think, with the, you know, the regulation stuff, and there's going to be some holes in the market at various price points or types of cigars. So I think it's important that moving forward, you know, manufacturers and retailers really think about the products that they're producing and what holes they fit into.
Okay, that's a really good example. Sorry, John, I didn't mean to cut you off. And I'll kick it to you in a second. You put that into terms that I think everybody listening to the show or watching the show can understand. It's still your product, just the same as, you know, under Drew Estate, like you said, with the acids and the Liga Privada. So that's interesting. I'm looking forward to trying that, and hopefully, Bob Dog, that answered your question. John, go ahead and jump in.
Absolutely. So we have a really good question from Garen Fry, and Garen wants to know about your Cloak & Dagger project, which I think just recently launched with the Ojos Verdes. My Spanish is terrible, so camera on you there, you're holding it up. So one of the things you mentioned there is you're not doing a blend reveal, and I think you might have hit off a little bit about the thinking behind that when you were talking earlier, but he wants to know a little bit about that, and wants to know what the next release is going to be. Of course, everyone wants to know, even as we're releasing all these new things, what's new after that? But he wants to kind of, you know, find out some more vision about what that project is going to be.
Sure. Cloak & Dagger is something that I've been working on for a little bit, and, you know, it just happened to come out and coincide perfectly with the whole FDA announcement. I hate to keep going back to that. But it was a vehicle that I wanted to put together that will allow us to get releases out of the factory quicker. You know, being that Viva is, you know, I'm at the, you know, I'm not going to say at the mercy of it, but I'm in the production windows of La Aurora. So, you know, as I said earlier, we manufacture for the largest, you know, seller of tobacco in the world, at Altria. So in that pecking order of things, sometimes packaging issues, there's going to be bottlenecks at different areas of the process, whether it's packaging, mulling, production, whatever it is. So what I did with this is by creating a standard uniform packaging So that the band's the same on every release. The only difference that'll distinguish the outside packaging of the way that it ships is that there's a hang tag that tells you the vintage year and the project name, so you can identify what the release is. But by doing that, I don't have to wait for printing. I can simply stamp these. It allows me to get things out quicker. I really look at some of the things like Robert Caldwell has been able to do, and in terms of getting new things to market pretty quickly and being able to navigate quicker than some of the big companies are. If we see ourselves as these crafty little boats and see a couple of battleships out there, we're able to kind of get around some of the hurdles quicker than they are. And allows us to get into market first, which is important when you're a boutique guy, is if you can really capitalize, if you have a new idea, getting out there first. So I look at what Robert's done in respect and what he's been able to create with Lost and Found, with Tony Bellotto and Jacqueline and other, the thing they've been able to do. And I wanted to have something that not necessarily copies it. And that's why I wanted to, kind of take my different twist on it. It's a one line, the same name, Cloak and Dagger, but just different variations of it. The first one, obviously the whole theme was not disclosing the blend. And being the genius that I am, I went with a wrapper that's pretty obvious what it is. So I think de facto everyone knew that it's a Candela, a Claro wrapper on the first release. And I'm glad I got that out of the way. So, that would just really, like, really? We don't know what this wrapper is. Like, from Mars, it's not. But the first release is Candela. I won't reveal anything else in it. I can't even, to be honest with you, remember how many countries are in this or different variations. I think there's some Nicaraguan fillers, some U.S., but I'm not going to even, the varietals or anything like that. It's my take on a Candela. It's not a metallic-y, airy kind of Candela. It's got a little bit of complexity and body to it, and it's not strong. I don't think anyone expects strength from Candela. There's been some strong Candelas out there, but it's just, it is what it is in this respect. And I think we just did 300 bundles of that, of the first one of the Ojos Verdes, Green Eyes. And the second release, so I'll just tip the hat a little bit, is going to ship in the middle of June, and it's 4th of July themed, the Screaming Eagle. So it is a Grand Salamon. It is a big cigar. It is a 4th of July party monster. It is complex, and it'll be a good cigar for the 4th of July. You can light some short fuses and get out of the way with it. It'll get the job done.
And you said it's called the Screaming Eagle?
Yeah, and I did a poll because we had I pulled the reps because I love getting the reps involved because they're the, they're the ones day in, day out that are in the stores and meeting with the customers. So we had a couple of different name ideas, like Screaming Eagle, America, and Purple Mountain's Majesty. And I think in the end, it was a tie between Screaming Eagle and Purple Mountain Majesty, and I had to kind of break the tie. So, and it fits the character of the cigar because this is a medium plus cigar with a lot of character. And I think in terms of the format, I don't think, there's any Vitola that's more American than a Salamone. It's got the American largesse coupled with, the sleek tapering. And it just says the United States, just when you look at the cigar. So that'll be the next release out, and that should be hitting stores in the middle of June.
Very cool. Now, with these releases, are these just kind of, are these one and done deals? I mean, with this, the Green Eyes, you said Ojos Verdes, I think?
And this gets into it. I mean, there's a lot of things of maybe what I originally intended. I don't know how the regulatory process will change them. I mean, am I going to, when it comes down to it, and I've got a pile of documents in front of me, and I'm swamped with just, boxes of files of absolute literary bullshit that the FDA, I think that's getting bleeped, I don't know, that the FDA wants us to provide because somehow that's going to prevent the 15-year-old from buying the Padron 1926 anniversary. I think in that process, we'll have to sort and shake out what's going to – I'm going to prioritize, obviously, I think.
Sure.
If you're not doing that, and obviously guerrilla warfare will be at the very top just by the sales of that cigar. It's done phenomenal and just continues to grow. Followed by the legacy stuff of Rapture, Propaganda, Advanced Warfare. The good thing is some of that stuff is actually right on the borderline exemption-wise, and we have to go back and look at some records because I was bringing that actually in as a house line before I actually released it. So that helps out in the process there with the store. And that's, I think you're going to see a couple of retailers that might benefit. I know the guys, there's and not even just benefit in terms of being able to hit the exemption, but also get their product out on their market without necessarily having it to be everywhere yet if they're not ready. The manufacturers that are also retailers, your General, your Altadis, Davidoff, they all have their own retail channels and their manufacturing, or, you know, other people, even like, you know, Dion Illusion and the guys at Crux, they're going to be able to use their stores as an outlet to get product on to hit that August 8th date. And they're not going to have to worry about necessarily making a wide release, and they'll satisfy the requirements of the FDA, which is simply that the product was on the market. There's no definition as to how wide the distribution has to be. Yeah. And there's actually no restrictive language like there is on the predicate, where they say that the product couldn't just have been available only in test markets, it had to have been fully available. This new date doesn't have any of those caveats attached to it. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of – it would be probably wise for people who are interested in finding some unicorn-style cigars to hit the retail stores owned by manufacturers right around the week of August 8th, the week before. I have a feeling you might see some things on shelves with photos being taken and things happening. And it's what it is. I mean, if in the end, people – I talk to people and they say, oh, is it really going to be that? Like, this – is the FDA going to allow that? It's so blatantly obvious. They're just trying to get on the market. And yeah, because if they're going to set the hoops up, all we can try and do is jump through them. And it's not in my best interest. I had to wire a significant amount of money to a graphic designer in New York City yesterday to create packaging in the Ivy line for releases that I don't plan on releasing until 2019. Man. And I'm working on the packaging in 2016. And I'm taking into consideration my 30% on my primary two panels. And that's what smart companies are doing right now, is everything you can get on between now and August 8th will be able to stay on the market while the FDA sits and looks through the deluge of paperwork that they don't think they're going to get, that they are going to get, and then tries to make sense out of a myriad of submissions ranging from Fortune 200 corporations like Altria to the guy that doesn't speak English on Calle Ocho, who's going to go into, Word and crank out some kind of spiel that some junior attorney at the FDA is going to have to try and make sense out of. And it's probably going to be in Spanish, and there's going to be all kinds of problems. I just don't see this being a smooth government. I mean, Obamacare was a pretty big endeavor, let's just say that. And didn't they have some issues with that process? Like, I mean, I think they put a lot more money into that than they are going to be into regulating, the cigar industry. And it's just like, when government gets involved with trying to intervene in the free market, it's not something that you really need. And it's this idea that it's going to somehow reduce harm. It's laughable, but it is what it is. And I think the people that start realizing that it's best to just prepare for the worst and hope for the best, they're going to be the ones that make out head and shoulders over. Listen, the guys that are out there pushing for the petitions to be signed, I commend them. I applaud them. They're doing great work. They're really trying to help amplify the voice of the consumers, retailers, and the manufacturers. In the end, I think it'll be a fruitless endeavor. I think that you get 100,000 signatures, yeah, you get a response from the Obama administration, and they're going to say, we're trying to do this, and that's it. It's going to be stonewalled. The legislative branch is our ally right now. I wouldn't put any eggs in the judicial review basket, because it's a severable document, which means if they find, for example, the warning labels to be unconstitutional, the remainder of the document still remains in force until that's reviewed. So there's not like one little poison pill in this thin thing that's been, the Supreme Court or one of the circuit courts are going to come out and say, hey, this is unconstitutional, the whole thing's gone, because of the fact that it was written as a severable document. So I think the eggs are really in the legislation. And if we get that amendment through the appropriations bill, where it, the rider, I should call it an amendment, that spells out to the FDA not to touch premium handmades, I think once that's in, it's probably going to stay in, because politicians, they try not to prevaricate back and forth on issues. And I think it'll narrow down our efforts as an industry. We'll know where our life is, basically. It's going to be in the hands of the Appropriations Committee. We'll be able to really hone in all of our lobbying efforts simply to the members of the Appropriations Committee, as opposed to what we've been trying to do with the bill. And I commend, again, the work that the CRA has done. These guys do a lot of countless hours that they spend, thankless work that they do, and I commend them for what they've been trying to do in it. This is an industry-wide issue, and I think we need just to see a lot more people come together and really do what's in the best interest of the industry in general. I mean, there's going to be different players where certain things may benefit them more than others, so there's a lot of mixed interests that are at play here. But in the end, I think what's going to happen is it's going to be in the hands of the legislature to either exempt it there, or if we go into the full-fledged process the FDA has already spelled out, it's going to come down to hoping that we can convince them to either see that some of the things maybe were ill-conceived in terms of how they fit our industry, and hope that's, you know, common sense and reason prevails.
Yeah, there's just so much. There's so many different layers to it. Just to remind our audience, you're listening to Cigar Chat brought to you live on CigarFederation.com, broadcast around the world in the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are out there in the world today. We're here with Jason Holly of Viva Republica. And, of course, the dominating factor is the FDA rulings. But, Jason, you've got some interesting takes on this, and I want to get back to it. But, John, this next segment's brought to us by who?
Well, Rob, this next segment is brought to us by Drew Estate, makers of fine products such as the Acid Cigars, Liga Privada, Undercrown, and the newest Undercrown Shade. Mmm, day good. Back to you, Rob.
You did. You stuck with Logan's read there. That's good. So, Jason, I'm, and we'll stick with this FDA stuff because obviously it's the elephant in the room, right? You almost sound hopeful at times when you're talking about it. And then maybe not so much. We've got about 10 minutes left, but it sounds like there are some things to be hopeful about. But then you talk about, you know, there's, I don't remember exactly how you phrased it. You phrased it just at the end there where there's kind of mixed goals. Like some companies have different goals, are going to be more involved than others. I mean, I think there's companies that kind of maybe stand to gain something by sitting on their hands. And there's the smaller and the younger companies, you know, like yourself, that, I mean, you guys, you need to get out there and get these things on the market. It's the battle lines. I don't know, battle lines, not the right term, but like the course of action from these different companies is going to be very telling, I think, over the next few months. But I mean, am I wrong that you mean, you sound like you're a little bit hopeful?
I think my optimism isn't couched in that government is going to solve our problem. That was my focus prior to getting into the cigar industry was largely in electoral politics in, you know, at the federal and local level. And it's, I mean, our interests, unfortunately, are not congruent with that of the companies that get the attention from the policymakers. And that's understandable. The way that this would be a 3 or 4 hour show just talking about
yeah.
how messed up the American electoral political system is. But let's just take that from the mix. And my hope is not necessarily that the white knight is going to come in either through the legislative aspect or, you know, some court's going to strike it down and say that it's arbitrary and capricious like I think it is. I think my hope is that I think what it's going to do is it's going to allow companies that maybe their growth hasn't been as, you know, positive as it could be because of the fact that they're in a market that's so crowded. It's very difficult for a company to get shelf space in this industry. And I know that as a retailer, because I have companies that are coming all the time trying to get into my shelves and I simply can't. And it's not good for my business to bring that product in if it doesn't already have a buyer per se. And those are the economics of running the retail store that are at play that I look at for my, so I'm looking at all these different lenses again, you know, from the La Aurora point, the Miami point, the Viva point, the El Jimador point, all these different aspects. And I think that it's going to allow the people that are able to think creatively, adapt, survive, and really, you know, take a quantum leap, so to speak, and double down on this industry. You know, there's going to be some tough decisions that are going to be made in some kitchens and some families. Like, what's going to be the move here? Like, Do we put all of our eggs in this basket and go, you know, headlong into a situation where we're going to try and, you know, be the independent that stands up to the regulations and makes it through? And that's a good thing. I mean, there's some cigarette companies and brands that are on the market today that they were smaller, that the regs actually helped out because there's just no more competition, so to speak. It sort of throws the field. And my thing is I'm confident in knowing that I think that I put together a relationship with some really good players in the industry. You know, whether it's Guillermo Leone, Nestor Miranda, Jason Wood, I mean, the Miranda family, it just can't go on about how amazing the people they are to deal with in this whole thing. And they've been around now for 26 years, going to 27 years, and this isn't going to put them out of business. I can assure you that. It's not going to hurt Guillermo Leone in Wild War. So by being partnered with companies like that, I'm hoping to, you know, I'll be involved with the process, so to speak, there, and I'll be getting a lot of that high-level guidance that comes from the companies that have resources kind of in the family circle. So that's going to help out right there. And I feel bad for some of the companies that maybe don't have that. And I'm trying to either put together an informal kind of group that can share resources for the smaller guys, you know, the guys that are going to be, you know, not going to be able to go out and hire Skadden to come in and do their regulatory work or something like that. It's, there's going to be guys that just, they don't have the ability to go out and hire a firm. And I think we're going to have to try and share resources with that, you know, those people and keep them in. It's got to be, I mean, the industry as a whole is better when it's inclusive. And I think this idea of just simply purging out the people that, you know, their dream, just because they don't have the, you know, the capital or whatever, or their foothold in the industry or when they came on the market, shouldn't determine whether or not they're successful with their dream. You know, in the end, that's really the fundamental issue of this is it's not about, you know, it's not about regulations and rights. And all, it comes down to just the principle of American freedom that if you have a dream and you really want to, you know, follow through on it and succeed, it shouldn't be, you know, what day you had that idea. Yeah. An arbitrary day. It shouldn't be, you know, oh, well, this guy has a lot more money. So he's gonna, I mean, naturally, that's a component of capitalism. But I think it shouldn't. I hate to see guys who, you know, they wanted to do. I know guys that have started companies in the last year. And you don't want to see that because, you know, maybe in the road I get through it and it benefits me in the end because there's more. But that's not the way I want it. You know, I want it to be done the way, you know, fairly. And that's, I guess I look at it from the egalitarian side and want it to be, you know, the way that America's always been, which is if you have a great idea and you can work harder than the other guy, you can kick their ass. That's what America is. I mean, it's not going to be that anymore. It's going to be what some, you know, innocuous, acronymous agency in Washington with people who don't know what a cigar is and think that kids are coming into my store and buying cigars off my shelves. No, they're going to gas stations with C-store product. But we got lumped in. You know, we're the 2% of the 100%, and we got lumped in with that. So we just got to either, you know, there's two options you have. Get out of the industry or deal with it. That's it.
Dude, I love having you on the show, man. And I'm bummed that it's taken us this long to get you back on. You use so many words that are never used on this show. Before you just an acronymous is that a, was that did you just use that word?
I'm not. Let's not call that a word just yet. I don't know that that's actually a word.
Well, but I know what you meant when you said it.
I think I can make it a word like that because I think everything plays. But yeah.
Well, it depends on when you thought of it. I mean, yeah. When did you said it?
February 15th. 2007,
yeah,
it counts. So it counts.
Yeah,
in the eyes of the FDA, it exists.
Absolutely. I'm just joking, but no, I love having you on the show, man. I love the way you talk about the just especially, and I didn't even really think about it, but having you on right now is kind of perfect in a way that you, because you can talk about this in a way that I can't, and I think a lot of our guests can't with your background. So it is interesting to hear. John, how much time do we have left?
We're wrapping down to 5 minutes here. Maybe we can ask a good question here from Harley Holmes. Wants to know a little bit about the Field General program with Viva Republica. Can you talk about that?
Ooh. Harley, that's something I'm going to definitely spend some time in the next couple of months of getting together. It was conceived right at the early onset back when I wasn't even involved with Miami yet. It was kind of self-distributing. But I needed to really put together a plan for it and develop something that makes it an equal partnership. You know, I don't want people out there just signing up and then they have to go and try and convince people to buy my brand. Like it's not that. It's about, you know, really using the individuals to help in the intelligence side of understanding what the trends are. You know, there's different regional things that the reps pick up on. There's some things that maybe just because of how big their territories they don't see. And it's about having boots on the ground in different markets to be able to help form opinions on the brand. So it's something that over the next couple of months you'll see some activity with. If you haven't signed up yet, sign up. If you have, you'll be getting an email from someone. As we are using Nation Builder as a software provider. I worked a lot with them when I was doing political work. And it will be creating like a Nation Builder community where everyone will be able to interact on and using that as a hub to be able to launch the entire product.
Awesome. Where can people sign up?
Right on VivaRepublica.com.
Okay.
There's a tab right there for becoming a field general.
Awesome. A couple more questions here. Bob Dog, again, with another question. And he's asking about the Culebra. And you had a Culebra, I think, was it last year or was it the year before, I think?
Year before.
And that was a fantastic Culebra. That was the three different cigars. And it was very limited. You only made, what, like 200 of them, right? Something like that?
Really? I think we made 200 packs of five.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So 1,000, yeah.
Yeah, very, very limited. I was lucky enough to smoke that. I thought it was fantastic. And it was a really cool way for folks, if they haven't experienced the Viva Republica line, to try three different blends. And, you know, very cool presentation. It comes in the coffin and all of that. But they actually smoked really well and was one of the few Culebras that I've smoked that I actually enjoyed because they are kind of funky. I mean, you're smoking a twisted cigar, but don't smoke them all at once. I mean, you can if you want, but that's I would recommend against it. Any plans to release that again, or you know, do a new one or anything like that?
Yeah, I think between now and August 8th, you'll probably see another Collabra. That one used Rapture Maduro on Guerrilla Warfare, so I'll probably have one now that'll have Propaganda, Advanced Warfare, and one of the new lines that'll be unveiled at the show. Not ready to talk about yet, but we're, you know, that the Collabra for me is more of a, that's the thing, it just goes to show you, I think. 1,000 coffins, it's not about the money aspect of it, it's just really not. It's not even worth it, you know, the time value reward if you look at it that way. But it's about, you know, doing it. It's something that I was always interested in when I became a cigar smoker. I was, you know, the mystique behind them and just the unique look. And something that I wanted to put out in the portfolio, not necessarily in a way to create profit, but as a way just to put something out that allows customers to try three different lines in one. I think someone else had done it before. I don't really look at that aspect of it. If it fits the brand, then I do it. It's not, you know, is it popular or is it not popular? It's you got to do what you want to do. But yeah. I think another Collabra is on the agenda.
I think I'm getting the feeling that another of everything is on the agenda at this point. I mean,
you don't even want to know how many warfares there are because
I do, and I feel like we're going to find out pretty soon.
I think you will. Yeah.
It's so okay. So we've just got a few minutes left. Now, is there a silver lining here that maybe we're missing? Because, like I said, you're looking at this as a manufacturer, boutique manufacturer, and as a shop owner. How is any of this going to benefit, I don't know, the average cigar smoker? I know that's kind of a convoluted question, but...
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that will actually end up benefiting the cigar smoker. I think there's going to be some costs that are, unfortunately, in the end, going to get passed off. You know, when it comes to the user fees that the manufacturer is going to have to pay in proportion to their, you know, the size of their manufacturing. But I think there's no real silver lining I can see. I think if anything, maybe the thing is it'll bring the industry. Hopefully, the industry will come together. I don't see it happening right now. I just
see it either.
This is not a backhanded at anyone involved in any of the rights groups. They're doing their job. Like Glenn's doing his job. CA is doing their job. Everyone's doing what they have to do. It's just a matter of, again, you're talking, and this is the thing the FDA didn't get. If we can't even come, like the vapor industry already, they've only been existing for a handful of years. They don't have all that romance and tradition that a lot of the Cuban heritage and Latino heritage brings into the industry. They're much more open, they're more modern, they're more like Google. And if you look at what we are in the cigar industry, we're more like, I don't even know what kind of antiquated, like the old Wells Fargo coaches, I mean, stage coaches,
system?
Like something, yeah, like whatever. I got to go back to that episode of Silicon Valley, just on all the things that made Jack Barker old list that someone sent over to me today. And it's just, it's like that thing. But it's like, it's definitely, we're two different industries. And I think that's the issue they didn't really see is the nuances of the cigar industry, the competitiveness, the blending, all that stuff. It's just, that's part of the industry. It's ingrained in the industry. The secret, you know, the romance of it. And that, unfortunately, I think a lot of that's gonna be the big victim. I mean, I look at Carlito Fuente, who's, you know, my mentor, you know, a guy that helped get me in the industry and has given me advice every step of the way. And I have just, think of the world of him. And his issue is he creates and puts his heart into these amazing boxes and packaging. And Guillermo's Preferido boxes. I mean, like these beautiful packages that we have. And they're going to be covered with a massive warning label. I mean, look at a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah.
How big the surgeon... we're talking about an inhaled carcinogenic product with, you know, 800 chemicals versus an uninhaled product that it's just, they're not even close, but the uninhaled product's going to get the massive 30% warning label and the cigarette pack is going to get the little,
still gets the same.
It's silly, but when you try and use logic and you try and use government in the same thought, you just, your brain just ends. It just implodes on itself.
On that note, we do have to wrap it up. We're right at the end of our Armed Forces Radio segment. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time. Really do appreciate it. You can find Jason, VivaRepublica.com. And pretty much Viva Republica everywhere, and I know you're on Facebook, Jason Holly. So you can find Jason that way. We're going to be back next week with another Jason Wood from Miami Cigar Company, so it should be another great show. Yeah. Thanks so much for tuning in. Everybody have a great weekend. Stay safe, and we'll be back with you next week. Okay, so we are still live. Now you can say the fucking FDA is fucking everything up, and we're all fucked. You can say that now. People can still hear us. We're still live on CigarFederation.com, and we're still going out on our podcast, no longer going on the Armed Forces Radio Network. I went into this show, and I didn't – We went real deep, not real deep. We whined a lot about the FDA in our last show with Logan and I. And I guess I kind of stupidly didn't want to talk about it today. But I'm glad that we did, because you bring up a lot of points that I mean, we didn't really bring up in our show, and you're definitely bringing a different perspective to what's going on. And so I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us and really kind of getting into the minutia of it without making it feel like we're getting into the minutia of it. So I hope I used minutia correctly there. That's the first time minutia has been said on the show. And I feel like, did I use it right? I feel like I used it right.
I felt like that was proper usage.
Yeah, proper usage. Awesome. Okay. Just to go back to cigars, I'm still working on this propaganda. And this, what did we decide that we were going to call it? Was it a fat Robusto? Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think it's listed on there as Robusto, but...
It's
not your average Robusto. It's a little
I mean, I started this before the show, and it's still, granted, I've been talking, but it's still burning. Now, my chocolate stout sucks. I did something wrong. It tastes metallic. It's no good. But before the show, I was pairing with a pale ale, and I just cracked open a rye imperial pale ale, and this pairs really well. There's something in that pale ale that pairs really, really well with this cigar. You're bringing out a lot of sweet notes in the cigar that I wasn't getting before. It's bringing out a lot of fruity notes in the beer as well. Very good pairing. John, we're going to have to feature this, I think, on our pairing show, and I don't think we've had. We have.
Embarrassingly, we have not done any Viva Republicus, and we need to rectify that on sharing our pairings. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's going to have to be a pale ale heavy episode, I think. We've got some prizes to give away, and I know people are waiting to hear that. I've got some winners picked already, and we'll go through that. We're going to pick some podcast listeners as well, so let me just get that out of the way. So all the winners, you have to email rob@cigarfederation.com with your name, your address, and stating that you're of legal age to purchase tobacco in your current jurisdiction. And the winners in the order that they ask their questions – Jason Myers, again, Jason, thank you. You always ask great questions, man. Tracy Drew asked a question that we addressed without actually getting to Tracy's question. Harley Holmes, we talked about his question. Jay Reiniger, we didn't get to yours, but I think we may have covered it. And Garen Fry. So again, Jason Myers, Tracy Drew, Harley Holmes, Jay Reiniger, and Garen Fry. Those are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 winners that are picked based on their questions. I'm going to pick... let's say 2 random folks. So just email rob@cigarfederation.com and put Viva Republica in the subject line, and tell me why I should pick you. And then I want to pick 3 podcast winners. Podcast winners, put podcast in the subject line. I know exactly when this goes out onto the podcast, and I know Forrest, you will be the first person to email. You're the first person every week. And
get your votes in for the podcast show. Don't leave us hanging.
Yeah, absolutely. Forrest, you need to vote every day, bro, because we stock your humidor, man. So all those emails will come in. The giveaways are done. We've got some prize packs that Logan will send out. Those I think he has those in hand already, so they should go out fairly soon. And let's see. We've got a couple more questions here. Jason, is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't?
Not really. I mean, well, I'll do a little segue off of your pairings discussion. There will be a pairing you can do in the future, which will be a Guerrilla Warfare cigar with Guerrilla Warfare IPA.
Hello.
No shit.
Breaking news.
Tobacco infused.
No shit.
Wait. Tobacco infused IPA? Who's making it? Can you tell me that?
Yeah, I'm working with a brewery that actually, it's a brewery that was started in my local area, SBC. And they've been exploding. They've started doing contract for some other stuff. They have an endospermatic mash system, which there's only a handful of those breweries
operating.
I don't even know what that is.
There's only a couple. I think Scheinerbach and a couple of – there's only a couple of – basically it has to do with how they – I guess they strip from the husk of – I'm not that into beer that I would know.
I was with you until you stopped. Really stripped the husk, and then
I think it's smashed on something. And it does something to increase the I guess how the flavors come out of the mash bill, you know, what they're doing. It's like, I don't know how to best put it on that side. I'm definitely much more in the like brown spirits, dark spirits than I am in the beer, but it's something we've been working on for a little bit. I'm trying to get, the goal was to have it done for Vegas so that people can try, but the FDA may have thrown a little wrinkle in the plans because I'm focusing my efforts more so right now on creating the few, you know, the decade of Viva and just the beer thing. And the beer is kind of, there's no real deadline on that because thankfully they haven't gotten the great idea yet to start regulating beer. I shouldn't say it.
It's like when you're expecting traffic and you're moving pretty smooth. You don't talk to your pitcher during a no hitter.
AmBev is going to be on the phone. AmBev is going to be calling the FDA now. You know, $1 million to test each microbrew. And
oh God, that's.
I'm surprised they haven't done that yet. To be honest,
that's
really interesting though.
This all makes me sad, but the idea of. And it's funny because, I mean, John and I, obviously, we do our pairing show together, and pairing with IPAs is tough, man. It either works really, really well, which we've experienced, or it just doesn't. But, excuse me, a tobacco-infused IPA, that's the process. I don't even know how you would do that.
But
very interesting.
You take cigars, you strip them of their band, you put them in a... you know, bucket of filtered water.
That's big barrel.
And you let it leach, and then you strain it through cheesecloth. And you're left with the residual marriage between, you know, water and organic material that leaches out the flavoring from it. And it's not meant to be, it's not done as a gimmick, but it's not necessarily meant to necessarily change the, you know, make it a dramatically different thing than it would be without it.
Sure.
But it's to give it some of that into the, you know, what you're drinking when you pair it. And guerrilla warfare of all the cigars that I think I have, you know, done, is going to, you know, in terms of standing up to. I drink a lot of World White Stout, Raisin Dextra, things from Dogfish Head, and I've never had a problem with guerrilla warfare not being able to stand up to any of those massive, you know, quads and high ABV kind of things. And I think guerrilla warfare has enough characteristic and body to it that it kind of can stand up to anything.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely see some Viva Republica shows in our future on sharing our pairings. That'll be, I'm looking forward to that. That's really cool. I haven't, there's been some companies that have done things where it's, you know, cigars meant to be paired. I know Casada does a couple and they do a really good job with that, with their keg.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And Oktoberfest, and John and I we've featured those, but to see something like that, that's different, man. That's really cool. I like the sound.
I'm going to make the bold prediction of the future of the cigar industry. I think Jonathan Drew has already kind of given you a glimpse as to what the future is for cigars. Massive diversification into just general luxury items, because you can't have all your eggs in the tobacco basket with the FDA. So you're going to see bourbons, rums, chocolates, coffees, clothing, a lot more wine. I mean, listen, the guys that are, like, I look at that stuff that Pete makes is just out of this world. And if you have guys that are, I look at it, and the people that are the cigar manufacturers are best, you know, able to go into these other areas, because we like to get in, really try and master an area of expertise, understand it. You know, you look at like a guy like Pete, who, you know, came from the cigar side and then went and mastered wine, you know, as his next area of expertise. And I think you're going to see a lot of serial entrepreneurs that are set up to be able to do that. And, you know, if you, like, I have a cigar bar that's about to open here in Pennsylvania, a Vegas Sun Casino. And I'm going to be able to serve my cigars, my beer, and sell my clothes. And you're going to see a lot more of that. And I think that's the model that, you know, companies like Davidoff have shown was possible. You know, obviously on a much grander scale, a massive, you know, massive company. But, you know, there are different areas that they have and have interest in, and diversification is going to be key, because I just think it's not wise to have all your eggs in the tobacco basket anymore. So you're going to see a lot of spirit companies and wines and a lot of different things coming, I think, from manufacturers.
Interesting.
Just do some trademark searches, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, trademark searches, and you see what people are already working on out there in the spirits category. And there's at least five manufacturers I know that have already been trademarking things in spirits.
Interesting. I was surprised when you said Screaming Eagle that was available.
Well, yeah, for tobacco, it's fine. Are you thinking of the wine? The wine.
Well, no, just well, no. I know about the wine, but I'm just in general, it seems like. It just seems like it should have been owned.
I have USPTO like hardwired onto my desktop because I'm on it like all day when I'm working on brand ideas right now, and I know a lot of other manufacturers are doing the same thing. And, you know, to make this time process a lot more condensed, you got, if you're able to run your own trademark clearances and at least get an idea, is that you shouldn't have a problem. It makes it a lot, you know, the normal process of doing this is a year for most companies. I mean, most companies don't have an idea and 3 months later it's on the shelves. It's a year-long process that's going to be condensed down in less than 90 days for people. And here's the secret. A lot of these companies use the same designers and the same band producers and the same box makers, and they're all clamoring for the, you know, now. They want it now. So the day the rigs came out, I called the three different designers that I work with, and I basically tried to lock them down for at least a month of their time. And that's why I have one that just started today on a couple of new brands on the Ivy line, and then a couple of new things on the Viva side, and then some other things I'm working on. So it's definitely changed the way I think. And I think it's changed the way a lot of manufacturers think.
Coffee and cocaine sales are going to go through the roof for the next 90 days in Miami. That's what's going to happen.
I mean, that's you caught me off guard with that one, John.
Excellent.
Yeah. No, it sounds like the way that you're attacking this, Jason, I hope that other companies are are seeing it through the same lenses that you're looking through. I know you said that you use that analogy before, you're looking through a few different lenses, and I have a feeling that might give you almost a leg up on some of these other guys, because you might be thinking about things in terms that they're not. But one thing that you did comment on, and we'll wrap this up here pretty soon, is you know, seeing the industry come together. And it seems, when I first heard this, first heard the news, I was on vacation, and so I kind of heard it, but I didn't really, you know, track down too much info because I'm running around, we're doing family stuff and graduations and things. And but it doesn't seem like there's been that banding together of the industry that you would expect, especially from this industry. When everyone's so friendly with each other, and I mean, obviously you guys are competing for shelf space, but at the same time, there's a feeling of camaraderie in this particular industry. And I'll speak mainly for like boutique companies, because you guys are all kind of in the same boat. But it doesn't seem like that that mass grouping together where you're going to kind of, you know, join hands and, you know, march the march or whatever, I mean, use whatever cliche you want. It doesn't feel like that's really happened.
Well, I mean, I think the one thing you can attribute it to is the uncertainty that's out there is still very daunting. I think it goes to show you just that some of the things I've heard from people, that this, you know, it's going to end, you know, charitable donations. That's just simply not the spirit of the law. You know, the idea is that that a manufacturer is not going to induce someone to become a new consumer of a product by giving them, you know, their first hit, so to speak. You know, to use some of that Miami lingo that you guys so love. I think that's the thing that they're really trying to get to the bottom of. It's not going to affect, if I want to give a box of cigars to, you know, a local fireman's, you know, fundraiser that they're doing, I'm going to do it. And if the FDA says I can't, then that's great. I'll do it as a private individual. I'll buy it and I'll do it. I mean, that's all manufacturers are going to have to do. It's silly. But it's going to create, it's what a regulation does in every industry. It creates a gray area. The companies that have the, you know, the bigger fortitude to be able to do some things and not necessarily worry about the repercussions are going to flirt in those gray areas, and they're going to gain an advantage. And it's you're no longer a free market, so it's no longer the best ideas and the best blends, and, you know, they go to the top. It's going to be, you know, who's got the best attorneys and who can outsnake the FDA and who can, you know, that's what it is. It's creating it into an industry instead of an industry of tradition and prestige. You know, people like Winston Churchill and JFK smoking cigars, where they're, you know, just the fate of the world hangs in their hands, is now being relegated to some kind of, you know, oh, it's a cigar and it's going to, it's you know, it's just all part and parcel of the nanny state that you know, some of the forces on the left are trying to create. And I hope that, you know, the United States in the election has an opportunity to tell Washington that they don't need, you know, Big Brother looking over their shoulder at all times in terms of making their consumer decisions. I think we're fine, and, you know, we're getting to the point where we're going to allow marijuana to be sold, you know, unobstructed in five states already recreationally. You know, that can go in, anyone that's 18 can go in and buy marijuana. And the FDA is not sticking their little heads in that. That's not only inhaled, but it's combusted, and it's grown using fertilizers and pesticides and all different stuff. It's very parallel to it. So we have this new market that's burgeoning and becoming the gold rush. And then we have our traditional market that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. And guys that have lived, there are hundreds smoking 10 cigars a day, like George Burns and you know, Alejandro Robina. These guys lived to be 100 years old. You know, all the Leon family, for the most part, they all lived in their 70s and 80s, and they're smoking 10, 15 cigars a day. So this idea that this new health issue that hasn't existed, since cigars were being rolled for hundreds of years now, it's kind of laughable. But I think in the end, the people that can be somewhat cynical, and then also you got to keep that in the back of your head that there is the opportunity still. If you can, craft a product that can be durable, I think you can still, be a player in this industry for years to come.
I think that's a good note to end on. Jason, really do appreciate you taking the time to hang out, and we're going to have you back on again before too long. It's fun talking with you, and you have a unique view of the goings on in the industry, not just the FDA, but above and beyond that. I'm now remembering our first interview with you and how much I enjoyed it, and I was remiss to not have you on more often. So really do appreciate you taking the time, being generous with your time, generous with some prizes for which we'll probably not be able to do, in a few years, we give the cigars away to our listeners. So again, appreciate that. John, thanks for thanks for hanging out. I know you had a busy day opening up cigars. You're on the other end of things, man. You're opening cigar shops in Canada, so.
Under the same legislation and terrible things that the United States is about to face, so we have a different lens and we're looking through it. It's ugly.
You guys have Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
You guys just spent a week worrying about whether or not he accidentally bumped someone. He apologized like 19 times. I Canada's a whole
just
level.
Absurd. Just absurd.
The Canadian media called it a brawl.
And he, like, because he bumped into someone.
It wasn't even like the Corey Lewandowski like claw move. It was like a little.
He's like
a
brush. Barely brushed her. It was the biggest dive seen in Canada in the last 20 years.
Oh, she flopped, huh?
Oh, yeah.
The Canadian constitutional crisis lays in the balance. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
He was charged with the official charge they use in the parliament was molestation.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It's crazy, but yeah
it's just absolutely outrageous. Anyways, we're looking forward, Jason, to seeing you in Las Vegas. We've structured our schedule a little bit more, so we have some time to actually spend time with a lot of people, including yourself. So really looking forward to that, and looking forward to not being completely blown out by humidity. So that'll be fun.
and having places we can actually smoke in Vegas, although that the number of places to smoke in Vegas is dwindling too. So we're fighting an uphill battle, but. We're going to end on molestation, and we'll go from there. Really do appreciate it. We've got Jason Wood, which I managed to not mix your names up this during the show.
Hollywood?
Oh, see, now you brought it to a whole new place.
Don't do a trademark search on that one. I'm not saying anything.
Oh my goodness! Spoilers. We'll read between the lines on that one. Jason, again, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun talking about a pretty heavy topic, but we didn't get to spend a whole lot of time on your cigars. Guys, if you have not smoked the Propaganda, please do so, because it is a fantastic cigar. Every Vitola I've smoked it in has been great. And pair it with a pale ale, man, because this Rye of the Lager, which is kind of a cute little play on words there, this is kind of good, from Sudvirk. Up in Davis, California. So anyway, really do appreciate it. We'll be back with Jason Wood next week, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And guys, thanks for tuning in. Again, keep your eyes out for podcast award voting, because I'm living under some sort of weird thought that we may actually win. So really do appreciate it. We'll be back next week. Everybody have a great weekend. Stay safe, and we'll catch you on CigarFederation.com.